Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Good to have you with us today for a show in which, as always, we've got way more than we have time to talk about on our list of topics for the show. As we get started, Jim Galloway, first, let's say what a pleasure it was to visit with our listeners down in Macon doing the show down there last Thursday night.
That was absolute fun.
Yeah, they really like you, Galloway.
Well,
they sort of rushed past me to get to you.
Oh, yeah, right.
No, they really, it was a great audience. It was wonderful to see some of the folks that we hear from either by email, by Twitter, by Facebook, whatever. So thank you all for turning out. We're in Columbus in June. I believe it's June 9th, but if I've got that, or June 7th? June 7th, Tom Faust says, and we'll, of course, have a lot more information about that show as we move into the next few weeks, because we'd love to see you turn out there. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB, and we hope you will. We'd love to have you join the conversation. And if you want to see how much you, if you want to see who has less hair, me or Heath Garrett, you can watch us on Facebook Live by just going to the GPB News Facebook page to do it. What do you think, Heath?
Well, you know, Bill, they had a great University of Pennsylvania did a study and said that both men and women find bald men who are confident, you know, more attractive and dominant. So I'm going to stick with that. That's a University of Pennsylvania study.
That's Heath Garrett. He's a Republican strategist, and we have him with us on Monday afternoons. Glad to have you with us today, Heath. We also have with us today Howard Franklin. He is a Democratic political consultant. And in a moment, Howard, we're going to talk about, you're very involved in an event that we're going to be discussing on today's show, the visit to Atlanta of billionaire Tom Steyer, the leader of a movement to impeach President Trump. We'll get to that in just a minute. But thanks for being here, Howard. Michael Owens, chairman of the Cobb County Democratic Party. We're always glad to have you here, Michael.
Happy to be here, Bill. And I'll tell you, I was down in Muskogee County last week, and they are looking forward to you guys coming down to Columbus.
I'm glad to hear that. All right, let's get started. And why don't we start? Because you're here, Howard. First of all, we should say, Jim, the timing of the Steyer visit today. So help us understand. Tell everybody about what Tom Steyer's been about.
Okay. For the 6 months, 9 months,
yeah.
he's been the star of these TV ads that he's paid for himself, where he's making the case for impeaching Donald Trump.
Right.
And he's gotten, I don't know how many points he's gotten, but he's gotten tremendous airplay. You do have Democrats in Washington pushing against him because they don't think it's the proper general election tactic for November. But then, of course, you know, who knew that ABC would also be airing that lengthy Jim Comey interview, and this feeds right into it.
Yeah, you had Comey, of course, last night. You heard a little bit at the very top of the show, saying, I don't think Donald Trump is morally fit to be president. We'll talk a little bit more about Comey, who hasn't exactly covered himself with glory. I think it remains to be seen as he goes through this book tour. You know, you don't have to pick sides here. You might be happy that there is a book that attacks Trump. That doesn't mean you necessarily have to find everything about Jim Comey to be laudable and applaudable. And I think as we talk today, we might discover that there are reasons to be a little cautious about some of the way Comey is dealing with this. But let's talk about Steyer first. Howard, you've been involved in helping him plan this visit today.
I have. He has a full day of visits of events in Atlanta today. We started with the prayer breakfast with a number of prominent ministers. We did a walk through an urban neighborhood of Summerhill and got kind of a tour from the partnership from Southern Equity. Partnership for some Southern Equity. And then we also did a luncheon just now with a group of Atlanta University students. And tonight they'll have a town hall meeting at Georgia Freight Railroad Depot. So there's 7 p.m. I'm sure there'll be a ton of folks. They're expecting a big turnout.
You know, let me throw this out to everybody. This is interesting. I assumed he was just going to be here to do a town hall meeting. He has been rallying people in hopes of getting a movement for impeachment together. But, you know, Heath, when I hear this schedule that Howard was involved in putting together, sounds like this is major stuff. This is the kind of schedule a presidential candidate puts together when he or she visits a city.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I do think in the 2020 cycle, there are going to be several billionaires running the Democratic side, an independent campaign, and possibly in the Republican primary as well. I don't know what Tom Steyer's real thoughts are, but he's definitely building a great reputation from a grassroots standpoint. I'm no expert on the Democratic grassroots, but I do pay attention to them quite frequently. And he's got an issue that definitely electrifies the base.
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you, we just left this luncheon. There are a number of students, probably 50 or 60 students in the room. Tons of informed questions. And the question that was last spoke to what we talked about before we got on air, which was the Comey book and his assertion that that impeachment wasn't the proper channel for removing President Trump from office. And he had a good answer. I think the room was interested in hearing his perspective, and I'm sure we'll hear more tonight.
What was his answer?
He basically said that it's the moral imperative of the American people who voted for him to turn back that decision and to vote him out of office, and that his concern, that was Comey's answer. His concern about allowing that to stand was just that this presidency and this White House, this administration is so reckless. So much could happen that we need to remove him now. That was his.
I want to go back to this schedule. You know, the tip off for me about this being more than just some visit, a prayer breakfast, Michael.
Yeah.
You don't schedule a prayer breakfast unless there's something more serious going on.
You do not schedule a prayer breakfast if your goal is just to promote a town hall, that's for sure. I think it speaks to the fact of where we are in Georgia politics today, and as Georgia truly becoming a battleground state and a state to where people from all across the country, once, you know, they've got their eyes on something larger and really want to test the mood of the country, I think they're going to start to look at Georgia as that state.
And truthfully, even if doesn't have any ambitions for 2020, which you know, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, it's always, this is a guy who's going to be putting his money in a number of campaigns. Yeah. Yeah. And in order to do that wisely, you do have to know the terrain.
Yeah, I think part of what was said was that getting to understand, and where do you start with the pastors, you know, in a state
right.
like Georgia. So I think part of the idea is not necessarily a run, although I have no idea what's going on there, right? But the idea is start to get a lay of the land and start to understand who the folks are that may need to talk to when it comes to putting money into the state of Georgia in some of these races.
Let me be clear for a minute, and maybe you all have heard something I don't. We should be clear. To the best of my knowledge, I have heard no one suggest Steyer himself is thinking about mounting a run.
He's been asked about it in the media.
Well, he's been asked about it, but it's, all right, fine. So maybe he will, maybe he won't. So what, Jim, interesting. Doesn't appear that there's going to be any major Democratic candidates on the Georgia ballot showing up for his events.
No. I checked with Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans last week. Both of them are staying away. But I'm betting that you're probably going to see some congressional candidates. Maybe
and let me just throw in there. We also, for the town hall this evening, our very own mayor of Columbus, Teresa Tomlinson, is going to be a part of a panel discussion, and then Bakari Sellers, who is a frequent talking head on cable shows and also a former state lawmaker himself,
South Carolina
mm-hmm. lawmaker himself, is also going to be on the panel with him. So we will have a couple of folks.
You've got some debate going on with Democratic candidates for Congress in Georgia, because you have quite a few of them going straight to the impeachment issue, even as the DCCC is advising these candidates not to go there, to stay local and let Donald Trump dig the hole for himself.
So it's hard to do, though, when that's considered low-hanging fruit, and you want to gain attention, and so many of the grassroots efforts are rally around this cry of impeachment and what will Trump do next. So as a candidate, you can only imagine
it's
low-hanging fruit.
It's a fierce temptation.
I think it's interesting, Heath, that candidate, maybe a couple of congressional candidates, we don't know, but neither of the Democratic gubernatorial candidates are going to be there. No really high-profile Democratic candidates in the 2018 cycle appear to be headed to these events. But it is interesting, you mentioned Teresa Tomlinson, who is a frequent, of course, panelist on this show, who we love having on. There's no question that she's giving thought to a race, some race in 2020. So it's not quite as dangerous for her in 2018 to show up for an event like this, and she could score some points for doing it.
It absolutely tells us a lot about the difference between primary politics and general election politics in Georgia. Both gubernatorial candidates clearly have data that show that you don't want to be this electrified come general election time this November, but it's a really smart move for the mayor of Columbus. She's definitely mounting an intelligent branding effort around the state of Georgia, and this really is a smart move on her part for trying to grow her brand within the grassroots of Georgia, and I took note of that. The other thing is, how much money is Tom Steyer going to be willing to spend of his own money, or is he raising it to spend in Georgia in this cycle? I think that's something that Republicans ought to be paying attention to.
That's the big question,
so,
Howard.
We didn't drill down on that, but there one congressional candidate, I think Francis Johnson joined us for the prayer breakfast this morning. He's running down in South Georgia. I know that this conversation will continue into the town hall this evening, and I know that Bakari or Teresa will bring it up as well, so stay tuned.
Yep. Okay, so it'll be interesting to see whether Steyer does start putting money into Democratic races in the states that he visits. But then let's go to this other question that you raised briefly before, Jim. The notion that the Democratic, certainly the DCCC, the DNC, the major national Democratic organizations are cautioning their incumbents and the challengers in races around the country, stay away from this impeachment thing. All you do is energize a Republican base, which up until now doesn't seem to have had a lot to be energized for.
Right, right. If I'm a Democrat and in Washington advising these people, what you want to explain to them is that the best case scenario for them is for outside of impeachment, and we don't have any evidence to do that with them. The best case scenario for Democrats is for Trump to have to go through a primary process, to be primaried by a John Kasich or by a Jeff Flake or someone. That would truly, truly weaken him. But however, if you start talking impeachment, what you do is Republicans can then start bandying about the word coup, and that's going to harden their opposition. I mean, it's already tough for Republicans to take a crack at Donald Trump, because you've got what, 80% or thereabouts within the Republican primary who are still backing him.
So I would disagree with that a little bit. I think following conventional wisdom is how we got Donald Trump in the first place, right? So if the two politicians that you mentioned, I think Kasich and Flake, definitely bring something to the conversation. But again, they're probably pretty conventional politicians, probably don't have what it takes at this point from what we've seen to dispatch a Donald Trump from the White House. I think everything ought to be on the table. And I don't think we should say, let's not talk about impeachment, because it hardens opposition from Republican ranks.
Yeah. And then bringing this back to local Georgia with some name that you mentioned, Francis Johnson, as to why someone like him would come, I think being out of the 12th Congressional District, which is pretty unique to me, being the fact that I looked at the Cook PVI, and that is just as good, if not better, it's better than the 6th Congressional District, and just as good as the 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has double the black population of the 6th Congressional District as well.
So. Unpack that a little bit for listeners who aren't familiar with the 12th and with what you've just said
Is an East Georgia Congressional District.
East Georgia Congressional District, Statesboro, Augusta. So the idea there is that they're saying that this district is competitive, basically, is the bottom line. So in a competitive district that may be more competitive than the 6th Congressional District or the 7th, And as I said before, having twice the black population, talking about impeachment would be something much more aligned to that conducive audience, and which would lead an idea as to why Francis Johnson would be at a meeting like this.
Okay, makes sense. It makes sense to zero in on specific races in specific areas with constituencies that might be more open to that message. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's really an important message. But Heath, in general, you think Republicans might get in? You know, the latest polling, at least from, I think, the Washington Post, on the kind of general matchup about who you want, Democrats or Republicans in Congress, Democrats are losing some of their momentum, according to the latest Washington Post polling, and that the races are kind of in a generic way tightening in terms of Congress. What happens when Trump impeachment is on the table? You think it gets even tighter?
I think there is some truth to the fact that if you give, I mean, politicians in the modern era need something to fight against. If Trump's up against Trump, right, that's a very difficult position to be in, whether you're Donald Trump or anybody else. But if he gets to post up against a unified enemy, right, so if the entire Democratic Party is coming after a Republican president, it does give him a reason to unify the party around himself, and it gives him something to fight about. I can make the argument, we'll talk about it later on the show today, Jim Comey is actually helping Donald Trump's numbers with what he's doing, right? So they're mutually beneficial to each other for what their goals are. But I do think that it's good for Democratic primary politics to talk about impeachment. I think it would really take the wind out of their sails. Not to mention the fact, we're not even talking about the fact, there's really no legal grounds to even discuss impeachment of Donald Trump just because you don't like the guy or think he might do something you don't like in the future. It's by no means should ever be grounds for impeaching a sitting president.
Unfortunately, I think there's truth there, right? Trump is his own worst enemy. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And he seems to do best when he has a foil, right? When he has someone to mount against him that he can create an enemy out of us. And whether it's Comey or anyone else, in the bottom line, the president is his own worst enemy. So give him room, you know, and let him kind of trip himself up, because when he's got a foe, he seems to do his best.
Jim, I'm not sure people realize it, because it hasn't commanded an enormous amount of attention, but I think there have actually been at least two votes in the United States House on impeaching President Trump. They've both failed. Interestingly enough, I think John Lewis, and there may have been even more than two for that matter, but certainly two. John Lewis is the one member of the delegation, the Democrat, of course, who has voted for them. Even Hank Johnson has said, I don't think we have any impeachable offenses at this point.
Right. David Scott has said the same thing.
Yeah.
We had Stacey Abrams in our offices last week. We asked her about it, and she says, "Yeah, show the evidence first. This is a quasi grand jury proceeding. Impeachment is by the House, so you have to have evidence."
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Comey book and the interview on ABC last night. The book officially comes out tomorrow, but it's obviously been getting a lot of attention. Reporters have had copies for a few days and have been able to file stories on it. Jim, the headline, I'm not sure how many headlines there really are from the book. Almost everything that we've seen, those of us who haven't actually read the book, but just accounts of the book, relates to matters that have been pretty well in the public eye for some time now. He gives us details on that meeting in which the president asked everybody to leave the room, his attorney general to leave the room so he could talk to Comey alone. He says that the president said, I hope you can see your way clear to dismissing charges, any possible charges against my national security advisor. I don't know what new has come out of this so far.
Well, actually, the one thing that's been new that I've seen is his admission that actually he came out to announce the revival of that Hillary Clinton email investigation because he thought Hillary Clinton was likely to win.
Yeah.
He thought that might have played a role in his decision. And in essence, he was trying to play the middle. The Republicans were still going to control Congress, and he didn't want anybody to think that that he was ignoring a faux pas by the president. I do think that the language that he has used is very, very interesting. I mean, this is a former federal prosecutor who nailed the Gambino family in New York, and he's drawing parallels to how Donald Trump operates.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in terms of sticking up shopkeepers, as he said.
Yeah, but he said he thought that meeting, that private meeting we just referred to, was kind of like a mafia initiation. Heath, your take?
You know, Jim Comey, I do have a law degree, although I don't practice law in the traditional sense, and I would say that Jim Comey's a flawed witness, right? That's the fundamental problem with him being the messenger on this anti-Trump train that many of my friends on the left seem to be on all day, every day. And he's flawed because he was helpful to Hillary Clinton one minute and then trying to not be helpful and be impartial the next minute. And then he comes out in the book and says things like, I think he's a morally flawed, unfit to be president. But he says He violates the basic norms of ethical leadership, but it may fall short of being illegal. So as a prosecutor, that's all the difference in the world. And so he's really, to me, a flawed witness here and trying to have it both ways.
Effort, the book isn't an effort to build a legal case for impeachment of the president, right?
No.
He's sharing his impressions of the president of the United States.
Yeah, but he tries to imply that he's like organized crime and that he must be doing something illegal. But then he says, it's unethical, well, but probably not illegal.
The good news is we don't need Jim Comey to figure out whether or not their office is investigating Donald Trump's behavior. Right? We got this FBI raid on his attorney's office last week. We got the Mueller probe that's still going forward, but it looks to be picking up steam. I think we'll get some degree of conclusion as to whether or not there's any illegality in the Trump White House or from the Trump campaign, I presume before the end of the election year, I would hope.
Yeah, and I think Comey did something with that I think may show up later. And the fact that he says, you know, hey, the president seems to be of higher intellect or something like that, but it's not about his moral aspect.
Not about his intellect. It's not right, about whether right? he is the physically sound.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, when we go back and talk about impeachment, you know, impeachment is clear, basically say it's not a matter of incompetence or maladministration. Right. And I think that's going to be important later on down the road. It's not about the fact that he's incompetent or that he's misleading this country in a way that many of us don't like. The idea of it itself, it says the Constitution specifies that impeachment can be brought for treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. So that's where the legality is set in. So we can break away from the fact of, is he incompetent or is his morals kind of askew? Get back to the fact of the matter of what's going to stand up in court, because if this does go down the road, that's what it's going to be about.
So an interesting side note to all this, though, is that he does answer a question that many people have raised for a long time, Jim, which is when the Hillary Clinton investigation was complete and he got up and made the statement that caused so much attention, got such a got so much play in the media. Saying that there was no reason to charge her in any way, but had serious questions about the way in which she handled herself. I remember the exact language. Maybe one of you can recall it. Many people say, why is the FBI director making this statement? Now he says in the book, it's because he can't reveal the national security issues at stake, but he had reason to believe that the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, a friend of his for 30 years, apparently, could not be trusted to handle this matter without prejudice. I was kind of startled, and apparently so is Loretta Lynch, because she's now
that's a bridge that's burnt.
I mean, which is why, Heath, I said a little while ago,
right. You know,
Comey is not covering himself with glory, even if you think everything he's saying is correct. We got to be able to look at him as well, I think.
Well, I think that's right. And everybody struggles, right? My Democratic friends, you know, love to hate him before they loved him again. And it's like a unhappy relationship. Now everybody loves him again. But yes, I mean, this Loretta Lynch, this development, quote, development still unknown. Right, about her, absolutely is plenty of fodder for my candidates on the right to continue to push what I think is a correct narrative that the Obama administration had some real ethical lapses that everybody wants to kind of run past, and that's still out there, and it kind of leaves Loretta Lynch in this kind of ethical legal limbo as well. So I'm starting to think this is a lot like the Clinton administration. Remember all the collateral damage around the Clintons, although it never ended up with Bill or Hillary. I mean, Bill did get impeached.
You mean sort of like the Trump administration?
Well,
lots of collateral damage,
and it's far and wide to personal lawyers and friends of the family.
Well, just to be clear, the Obama administration, no scandal. A handful of
IRS.
No scandal anywhere near the type of scandal that just 365 days of the Trump administration has brought upon this guy. I mean, it's incredible when you think about it.
All right, I've got to get us to a break. As I go to break, Howard made the point that we may not need Democrats, may not need Jim Comey's help in casting aspersions and in perhaps threatening the presidency of Donald Trump. In fact, this afternoon in federal court in New York, there's a huge story unfolding.
As we speak.
Exactly. We saw Michael Cohen walk into the courthouse. He, Jim, is doing, he's challenging the FBI's raid on his offices and asking the court to give him the right to vet the papers that the FBI will or will not see, or turning it or turn it over to a special master to do the
like
same.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Dear policeman, I will call through my own files, and I will give you the material that I think is relevant.
You might be interested in, right?
Well, the other quick note, the latest development in that before they got to in front of the judge today is that the Trump's lawyers are now saying they want to have a role in vetting the paper, since they believe that certainly some of the documents seized relate to attorney-client privilege between Michael Cohen and the president. So we're going to oh, and by the way, Heath, you'll be glad to know Stormy Daniels is planning on being in the courtroom. We did not see her go in by the time this show went on the air, but she was promising to be there. And boy, you know what? The New York media, they're a trip to watch. They were just, there couldn't have been more of them standing outside that courtroom.
you know, this is, you got to hand it to Stormy Daniels. I mean, she is playing Donald Trump's game, and she's winning at this point.
Absolutely. All right. Let's take a break right now. When we come back, Nathan Deal's got a really interesting week. Part of it he's already dealt with this morning. We'll talk about it. And he's going to, he's dealing with Blue Cross and Piedmont Hospital, and he's heading to New York to talk to the folks who rate the bonds for Georgia. We'll talk about why those are both important after this.
Here are three great reasons to support GPB right now at gpb.org. One, today is the last day to enter to win a St. Simons Island getaway, including a three-night oceanfront stay at the King and Prince Beach and Golf Resort. Two, you'll inspire others to join you in support of GPB during our spring fund drive. And three, you'll do your part to support the programs you love on GPB. Please go to gpb.org and click donate. And thanks.
We're back on Political Rewind. Jim Galloway, Heath Garrett, Michael Owens, and Howard Franklin are at the table today. Jim, Nathan Deal was in the headlines of your Political Insider blog today for two reasons. First, he decided to do some mediation between Blue Cross Blue Shield and Piedmont Hospital. They have not been able to reach an agreement on payments that Piedmont will make, how they will rate the payments that Blue Cross Blue Shield wants for services. And as a result, they've kind of paralyzed everybody who wants to use Piedmont.
You've got 600,000 Georgians who have signed up for health care from Piedmont via Blue Cross Blue Shield who cannot go to those facilities now.
Yeah,
and the state has already stepped in with a proviso that it will supplement employee insurance claims for the next 30 days while this thing is worked out. But the governor sat down with representatives of both companies and gave them an ultimatum afterwards that said, if you don't fix this by tomorrow, we're stepping in.
And one of the reasons for the governor's involvement, Heath, is that there are a great many state employees who are in the networks that at Piedmont Hospital and want to be able to use the services there, obviously.
No, that's exactly right. There's a real state interest here, and this is a great example of the complexity of the healthcare morass that the nation's in. And it's right. Whether the governor has, and I don't know for sure, I'm not an expert on what his executive authority is and the exact contract negotiations. However, both the insurance company and Piedmont are heavily regulated by the state, and they both have a lot of interesting issues before the state. And so a governor does have indirect influence on both of these parties, if not direct influence on the negotiation.
Right. Now, this has happened before, but it's never gotten so serious. And I think one of the reasons that the state is dipping in is that you've had a huge expansion of Piedmont, the Piedmont healthcare system into Athens with the University of Georgia. And you've got a very large state employee base right there. And I think the Board of Regents is as far as state government is concerned, the Board of Regents is the largest client involved.
So I'm curious. I was curious by the ultimatum because I'm not quite sure, and I'm not sure any of us at the table are clear on what the powers are the governor can invoke to somehow force an agreement between this insurance company and the hospital.
Yeah, I'm not an expert there either. What I will tell you is a denizen of the state capitol and the Gold Dome, I do think there's plenty of opportunity for the governor to throw his weight around and to say to the folks who are involved, either you'll fix this year or we will look at this. Whomever the next governor is, whoever the next legislature and legislative leaders are, we'll take a look at this and your companies in the 2019-2020 session. So I don't know what you can threaten beyond that at this point either.
We'll watch. Jim, the other part of this interesting week for the governor really is it's built around a story that I did not do enough to ask you all to talk about during the legislative session. And that is this story about the battle between Stockbridge and Eagles Landing. Eagles Landing, essentially a subdivision of the city of Stockbridge, fought to be freed to establish their own municipality separate from Stockbridge. They won in a fierce and bitter fight. The governor has not signed this legislation yet, but the reason this becomes important is we have never in this state before. You can take an unincorporated area and annex it, but we've never had a city attempt to raid another city, essentially.
Right, exactly. What this does is takes roughly half of the, at least the, by tax digest, half of the city of Stockbridge and hands it over, plus more territory, to a new city of Eagles Landing. And what's critical here is, okay, once you do that, the city of Stockbridge has contracted, it has certain debts, I think $14 million in debts, yes. No property taxes, but $14 million in debts. So the question becomes then, who's responsible for that debt if the city tax base is sabotaged? And that raises the question of, it could raise the question of liability for the state, if you are a bond raider,
and in fact, that's the reason the governor is going to New York, Michael, is he's already been cautioned by at least one organization there that this jeopardizes the very solid ratings, bond ratings that Georgia has always had.
I mean, the AAA bond rating. There's one buyer specifically that said this without a doubt. This unprecedented move that the state of Georgia is taking. Could directly affect $14.5 million of unsecured bond debt.
Yeah. Don't talk about Stockbridge and Eagles Landing. Talk about Buckhead and Atlanta.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Again, that's the key sort of unprecedented aspect of this, right? And then the fact of, you know, and I've talked with the mayor Anthony Ford down there, and the idea that they don't have property taxes, and you know he's on board and trying to do a great job, but he's got, you know, taking Eagles, the proposed lines for Eagles Landing is going to make it where they absolutely have to impose these taxes. And that's definitely something that he nor many people down there are looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that the governor will look into this and see that the right thing to do here is not to sign this legislation. Obviously, bills that get passed by both chambers become law even without his signature, so I guess it would require a veto at that point. But the idea that we're getting into this unprecedented area, it looked sort of similar to the proposed takeover for Hartsfield-Jackson Airport, which also ran into some bond issues as well that hadn't necessarily been thought out when the legislation was proposed.
Yeah, this is. I think there's a much bigger issue here, right? We've been seeing the citification of all of our counties, right? And now we're talking about people kind of seceding from and or quote, freeing themselves, depending on which side you look at it, from these individual cities. And it does have long-term implications. It's not really Eagles Landing versus Stockbridge, because every other segment of every other city that's unhappy with the mayor or the council or some other decision makeup is going to start looking at trying to withdraw themselves and create even smaller cities. So I do think the legislature is going to have to get a hold of this in the years to come, whichever way this goes. And then look, there's some underlying racial issues here that I think when we look at the future generations, we've got to find a way to make sure that as these counties and cities are in transition demographically, that we don't have these fights every time we have change of control, because the state of Georgia is changing demographically as a
whole. And that's what's happening in Henry County.
Exactly. Yes.
Henry County.
Henry is one of those counties in transition, and we've got to find a way to not have it be the
Eagles Landing is a largely white subdivision of Stockbridge. Stockbridge is a majority African-American city. And Councilman Khalid just tweeted us, is the city of Eagles Landing just a prelude to a county of Milton, which is, you know, the kind of question that people are going to raise over this sort of thing.
Well, that one is stopped by a constitution. That would require a constitutional amendment.
Yes, but it's the same thing in theory that you're talking about here is using efforts like that to deal with the demographics of the way the demographics of the community are changing. By the way, Tracy Maximilian tweeted, your guest is more, this is about you, Mr. Garrett, is more than stretching trying to compare Obama to Clinton. He's not even on the same planet as Trump. All right.
So, Wendy, just the last thing on that Stockbridge thing, that was a party line vote as well. So you brought the racial component, but there's also a clear political component to that because it was a straight party line vote.
All right. We haven't heard from the governor on whether he's going to sign or not sign, but I'll bet you if he gets an earful from the bond rating agencies up there about trouble ahead, it will certainly have some impact on what he decides to do. Jim, the David Schaefer investigation, the independent ethics investigation into whether, in fact, he was guilty of the accusations lodged by a longtime female lobbyist at the Capitol who said that he had harassed her sexually on a number of occasions. That concluded with a finding that there was the investigator could find no way to substantiate and prove the charges, right?
That's right. That's right. It includes some interesting little caveats there. I think Bill Cowsert, Senate Majority Leader, was quoted as saying, well, he believed the woman involved.
Penn Payne was the investigator who looked into this.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, this decision was made so quickly and so vociferously that I think, you know, rather than hurting Schaefer, this could actually, a backlash could kind of help him in a Republican primary where the Me Too movement isn't quite as strong as it is on the Democratic side.
And the timing of this may have something to do as well. I think the allegation came out the day after he qualified. So So it only kind of echoes the fact that he's saying from day one this is politically motivated, you know, and now it being unsubstantiated.
And there's no question it has an impact on the primary. There's not much time left, or really only a few more weeks till the primary, and that's where this was having its most impact. To have this, that all the timing, when it was announced, and then have it somewhat cleared up, I'm not sure that this totally exonerates. There probably are a couple more actions that could be taken that may affect the primary as well. But for a front runner who has the most amount of money in that race for lieutenant governor with the most name recognition, to have this kind of wrapped up as quickly as it wasn't enough time for it to impact this primary and help David Schaefer in the short term.
And you guys will remember as well, there was a piece of legislation proposed that would have codified behavior between lawmakers and lobbyists as it relates to sexual misconduct that did not make it, I think, across the finish line on sine die. So we'll see if this issue comes back or is reborn in the 2019 session.
Yeah, that was a punish the lobbyist.
That's
movement.
Right.
and we'll see if it comes back again. To give them another shot at people like you.
Well, it's interesting that in the midst of the investigation, or while the charges hung heavily over Schaefer's head, we had another financial disclosure period come to an end, and it didn't hurt. Well, he couldn't raise money during the session, but he escaped still with far more money than anybody else in the race, right, Jim?
Right, right. Yeah, and that's Jeff Duncan and Rick Jeffries.
Okay. So we'll see how that turns out. Jim, let's talk a little about some campaigns coming up and then get to your most recent Stone Mountain story. But let's talk about a couple of the campaign developments that are going on right now. I'd love to play a brand new Stacey Abrams commercial and then ask you all what she's doing here. What we're going to hear, it's a video, of course, but what we're going to hear is the voices of men. Men of different races. There are a number of white men, a number of African Americans, there are Hispanics in there, and they are looking pretty much right into the camera and endorsing Stacey Abrams.
She gets it. She's tough. She's resilient.
Stacey Abrams, she's Georgian.
She understands all of Georgia. She's fighting against tax hikes that's going to hurt guys like me.
Guys like me?
Guys like me that get up at the crack of dawn to go and work long hours. She can work with Republicans. She can work with Democrats. She fights every day for education.
To protect our families.
Better health care. That's Stacey Abrams.
Stacey Abrams.
Stacey Abrams.
What'd you think I'd say? She's good, and she'll make a great governor.
Heath, we thought that Stacey Abrams was appealing to African-American women or to go to the polls and vote for her. What's this all about?
Well, it's obviously, in campaigns, you keep up with what's happening and where your greatest weaknesses are, and then you lead with television ads and radio ads that help shore up those gaps. And there's no question that this is, it's a very transparent move to say, okay, I've got to broaden my appeal beyond a specific gender. Shockingly for some folks, men do vote still. It's not always about women. Men only make up about 46% of the electorate, but it's a sizable percentage. And I think it's a smart political ad, and I think it's a good ad. If I rated it as somebody who does media on my own, it was a good ad for her, knowing she needed to broaden her appeal.
Yeah, I agree with Ethan. I'd also say, like him, I think it was maybe a bit unexpected based on how we've heard these two campaigns being talked about all this time. And I think she's got a couple different tricks up her sleeve. It's not going to be it's not going to be focused on just one part of the demographics. And I think I think it mixes things up for this primary, which I think is very well needed at this point. I think it's been a sleepy race beyond the media coverage thus far in terms of ad making and getting folks out actually talking to voters.
It may be a very, I don't want to use the word sneaky in a negative sense, but a sneaky way to say, whoa, she's talking to us too, right? Not me too, but talking to us too. at a moment right before the elections where they can go, oh yeah, she spoke out and talked directly to me.
Yeah. My only criticism would have been to take the tie off the white guy. Put a little grease on his face.
All right, let's do this. Let's get a break out of the way. We'll come back and have more with Political Rewind.
This is it. Today is the last day to support GPB and enter our drawing at gpb.org to win a King and Prince getaway for two to St. Simon's Island. This vacation includes a three-night oceanfront stay and a round of golf, courtesy of the King and Prince Beach and Golf Resort. No contribution is required to enter the drawing, but because you listen, we're counting on your support. That's gpb.org, and thanks.
On the next Fresh Air, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Lawrence Wright. He's written books about Al-Qaeda and Scientology. His latest is about his home state of Texas, why he left as a young man, what brought him back, and what makes it special. His new book is called God Save Texas, A Journey into the Soul of the Lone Star State. Join us.
Fresh Air this afternoon at 3 here on GPB.
Jim Galloway, Kevin Abel, Democratic candidate in the 6th District congressional race, fighting to take on Karen Handel, the incumbent in the fall. He released his spot the other day, too. You guys had it in the Political Insider blog. Let's listen to what Kevin Abel says.
President Trump, my name is Kevin Abel. I'm an immigrant and running in Georgia's 6th congressional district, in part as a reaction to your holding DACA kids hostage. My parents brought me to America at 14, and thanks to hard work and opportunity, I've built and sold a business, created jobs, and raised three amazing children. I'm Kevin Abel, and I approve this message, sir, because America was a better, more decent, and kind place before you.
What do you think, Jim?
Well, I'm going to point us back to Mr. Owens here, and the point he made that if you are one of three or four people in a primary and desperate to get attention,
Well, attacking Donald Trump is the way to do it, yeah. even if you might have to go a little bit de-emphasize that during a general election.
Yeah. Heath, it strikes me that in a primary, you can't go too wrong by going after President Trump.
Not in a Democratic primary. I think that's, as I said, I think Donald Trump, particularly within the Democratic primary, is like Obama was for Republicans. He's the greatest unifier and motivator for the Democratic Party. And so within the Democratic primary politics, it's a smart ad. And there's some substantive policy issues. I mean, this gentleman went about it and did it the right way, which is one of the issues with DACA from a policy standpoint. But that being said, I like the fact that the Democrats are having a primary over there in the 6th District, and they're going to have to fight it out. And it tells me that they're going to have to spend some money just to get the nomination.
Yeah, your two other candidates are Lucy McBath and Bobby Capel.
McBath.
There's another one as well.
Is there?
Yeah, Stephen Wendt. There's a fourth candidate.
McBath was just had a piece in Vanity Fair in her effort to raise her national profile, I assume hoping to get some money from out of state. She's a fierce advocate for gun control because she lost her son to a terrible gun violence episode. We'll see how that plays out for her. Their primary is getting very interesting.
There are going to be some incredible runoffs in Georgia.
Yeah.
After May 22nd. Not just the governor's race, the Republican side of the governor's race is one of them, but the 6th and 7th congressional districts.
Okay, so I would argue very quickly, Michael, I'm going to go to you because you have part of the 6th in your neck of the woods up there as chair of Cobb County Party. Kevin Abel, by seizing on DACA, it's probably true what Galloway's saying, that it's a good message in the primary. It may not be quite so good in the general. But DACA's an issue with just a little tweaking you can use to attract people across party lines because there's general support for DACA, Republican or Democrat.
Yeah, I mean, it's a move that he's making. Number one, I've sat there and I've talked to Kevin. I think he's earnest in general in that feeling, and he does have an affinity towards the entire DACA issue with being an immigrant that came over when he was 14 years old from South Africa, I think. So I think that's very legitimate, more so than just a campaign move. But I also think it definitely speaks to the larger call for immigration reform and DACA that will go to both sides of the aisle. So if this is something pushing towards general, it's a good move. But in towards the primary, it's really kind of to look like every candidate is going to have their piece, if you will. We clearly know where Lucy McBath is, right, with gun violence. So I think it's really going to come down to people trying to stake their claim and what they want out of this primary and then pull voters to them to speak to that.
All right. Jim, a week ago today, we had Michael Thurman, chair of DeKalb County CEO on the show, making his proposal for how to make Stone Mountain Park much more inclusive by telling the history of the Civil War, not presenting it as a lost cause monument. You followed up and talked to the gubernatorial candidates about this. As much as Democrat Michael Thurman would love to get support from his own party around this, it's not as easy as he thinks, you found out.
No. We had Stacey Abrams in the office not too long, 2 days after Michael was here on the show. And she was talking about a number of things, but of course, right after Charlottesville, you'll remember she put out a really provocative series of tweets, and one of them said that the bas relief carving on Stone Mountain, the largest in the United States, needs to come down. And I asked her if she still felt that way, and she said yes. And that could come back and haunt her. Should she be the party's nominee in a general election? I posed the same question to the Evans campaign, and she said, as Stacey Evans said, let's let Michael take the lead on that one. We'll follow his lead on that one.
You know, it strikes me, Howard Franklin, that's a pretty smart position to take. I mean, Stacey Abrams certainly understands who her voters are, and so we give her credit for appealing to them with her statement. But the Evans statement, give it over. He is, after all, an African-American Democratic leader.
And in addition to that, he's a historian in his own right. Obviously, he represents the county as a CEO of the county government. So, yeah, I do get I totally understand why there would be some reluctance to address this issue and to let someone who's made the decision to get out in front of it. I went to the State of the County address that he did also at the Stone Mountain Park a couple weeks ago, and he talked a lot about, I think I mentioned on this show, as a matter of fact, his personal connection to Stone Mountain, the fact that his one of his daughters had her graduation party there, that, you know, he lives in the shadow of the mountain. And I do think he is obviously a strong communicator and a good spokesperson to be taking this on. So I respect that position for certain.
You know, Bill, also, you've seen Democrats movement on this, but you've seen Republicans move on this as well. I mean, what Sam Olin said last week was quite incredible. I had never heard an elected official, even a former elected official, compare the Confederacy, the dilemma of the Confederate history to that of Nazi Germany. That was done on the air here.
Sam Olin has been freed.
Yes.
He's much more speak his mind now.
Fran Miller has endorsed, is siding with Michael Thurman. I think it would be a good idea for somebody to approach Johnny Isaacson and ask him the same question.
I think this is akin to that moral arc of justice, right? And where we are as a country, obviously as a state with this. And we're going to get to the point where everyone, regardless of what side of the aisle they're on, are going to understand that monuments towards the Confederacy belongs in museums. And simple as that.
Well, wait. Let me be careful. Maybe be sure what you just said. Do you support what Thurman is trying to do in terms of making Stone Mountain reflective? It's not a museum. It's a park. He's going to have to put a bell tower. Maybe he's going to go for the bell tower on top. Are you on board with that idea or no?
I'll defer to Michael Thurman.
He's running for Cobb County chairman all the time, but this sounds like a guy with higher ambition.
Time for a prayer breakfast.
I'll be at his prayer breakfast.
All right. We're out of time for today's show. It's been great to have you all in the studio, Howard Franklin. Good luck with your event tonight.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
We'll look forward to hearing how it turns out. Absolutely. For you. And we'll, who knows, maybe you're going to be one of his campaign managers down the road, Tom Steyer. Michael, did you want to say something real quick?
Make one correction. The last candidate in the Democratic primary for the 6th Congressional District, his name is Stephen Griffin. He's a former policy guy at the CDC.
All right. That's Cobb County Democratic Party Chairman Michael Owens. Heath Garrett, Republican strategist. We loved having you with us again. We'll see you next Monday. Galloway, it's always fun to have you in the studio. People can read you, I didn't say it earlier, on Wednesdays and Sundays in the AJC.
Yeah.
What do you got coming up on Wednesday?
Well, I'm going to this Tom Steyer.
Oh, all right. Have fun over there. That's it for us. We're about out of time. Wednesday, we're back with you at 2:00. Mary Margaret Oliver will be in the studio. She hasn't been here since really the session, because they're so tied up down there. And she'll be joined by our good friend Todd Rehm, who we're very happy wants to be back out dealing with the show. So that's it for us. I'm Bill Nygut. We'll see you on Wednesday for another Political Rewind.